Blog Talk Radio.
Area code. Cora has a comment, and after that, we'll go to 832. Cora, how are you?
I'm fine, and you?
Yes, I'm blessed by the Almighty. Yes,
yeah, when you
me.
Were talking about these songs, I said, I grew up in the area of Woodstock. I was in college when Woodstock was going on, and you know, in the songs that I said, I remember when the morality changed. When I was in high school, I remember if a girl got pregnant out of wedlock, she didn't come back to that same high school when she came back to school. And then in a few years later, it seemed that everybody thought nothing of it, an illegitimate child. I mean, I even went to a baby shower for one out of wedlock. It seemed like, you know, Satan had made everybody think, oh, that's perfectly all right. But now about the music thing, I'd like to make one comment. I saw a couple of years ago on Facebook, there was an article where one person, they had made a comment. I think they were originally from Europe, but they went to a meeting of some music producers or something, and it was like a closing. He said it was rather secretive, and it was in a secret location in a certain mansion. And they were told that in the meeting, well, we want you to, you know, promote this music, the rap type music, or music that incites criminality. And it's because they wanted to fill up the prisons. But he said it kind of disgusted him. And so he just gave up. He went back to Europe, he said. But there was a group of musicians. Music producers or something, but they got together and had a meeting there. For music that would bring about criminality in black society. Yeah, I can't remember who made the post, but I remember reading that on Facebook. But that was, it was definitely planned. I mean, they find it all kind of ways to destroy us. And so
the deep that you're mentioning that about this secret meeting that they say allegedly Jay-Z. There's no proof of this meeting ever happening, as far as I know, but. The word is out allegedly that Jay-Z, P. Diddy, and others were at the meeting, and where they were saying they were taking music in a different direction. And some people stayed in the room and said, well, listen, I'm going to deal with whatever music I'm dealing with. I'll continue to do what I'm doing, and I'll go with the program. And others walked out when they seen where it was going. I do know years from that, there was a coalition that rappers was putting together to stop the violence in the community, led by KRS-One and others. Even Queen Latifah was a part of it, where they was going to use the music to change the violence and change all of that, stop the violence and all of that. And they shut that right down.
Mm-hmm.
And they shut that down and went straight to gangster rap. And it's deep that they were listening to Ice Cube and didn't mind promoting Ice Cube when he was with N.W.A., N-Words with Attitudes, when they were talking about, I'm the brother that'll smother your mother and make your sister think I love her, Dangerous, and it just, you know, when they was cursing and treating our sisters like nothing in music, it's deep that they listened to Ice Cube when he was writing those lyrics. But when Ice Cube later in life realized the impact of that music, and came back to with this plan for Black America with experts and professionals to change the course of our people, they ignored that Ice Cube, but listened to the young Ice Cube that was writing gangster rap music that led to the degradation of our community. So that's
right.
Deep
so
in
they,
itself. They didn't
yeah,
mind
they
listening to Ice Cube
right.
when he was writing music that was affecting us negatively. But when he come
right.
together and say, I want to do something right for my people, a plan for Black America with high officials and professionals in our community with a plan to help us, and you'll say, well, I'll talk to you after the election? Folks, that's saying something in of itself
right.
when they'll listen to a Black man. They'll only listen to a Black man in our current time if he's saying something that's counterproductive for Black for black people. But go on. You have the last word before I get to the last, the next call.
Well, that was pretty much it. I just wanted to mention that that meeting that they had where they wanted to promote rap music that that instigated violence in the neighborhood. In that meeting, and then and this one particular guy that wrote that article, he said it kind of disgusted him. He just said the heck with it, and he went on back to Europe because he that means he didn't want anything to do anymore with those that group of people.
Well, thank you. All right. Now, Deloya, we had a lesson a long time ago. We did in which we did some comparisons. If you're there.
Right.
There was a guy, Woody Allen, who out of nowhere, he ended up with a young girl that they claim at one time was the adopted daughter, this Asian girl, and no one said anything, right?
Right.
There was another guy, a musician, the one that stole Little Richard style.
Elvis.
Not Elvis, another dude.
What's the guy's name? I know you're talking about. Yeah.
He was known for being, he married his, like a 13-year-old cousin.
Yeah. What are you saying? What? Great Balls of Fire or something like that.
Yeah. Great Balls of Fire. Yeah. The one just stole all of, Little Richard licks. Let me get this guy. Jerry Lee Lewis. Oh yeah. Let me pull him up real quick. Great Balls of Fire. Yeah, you're going to hell. Jerry Lee Lewis, young wife. Let me type it up. Young wife. Oh, there it is. Myra Lewis. There it is. Ain't this sweet? See? I'm going to show you how the rules change for us compared to everyone else, Elder Lloyd. Grown man. What happened to Jerry Lee Lewis' 13-year-old bride? She's been here the whole time. Los Angeles time. Look at this guy with a 13-year-old. Look at this. Right? So, Elder Lloyd, I guess this is okay. But, you know, and this is why I like to mention R. Kelly all the time, to show you the double standard here. R. Kelly got locked up for a RICO charge.
Right.
You know what I mean? Escobar, he got an Escobar charge on him. Most people thought it was that it was actually something, you know, sexually explicit or something that happened where there's proof that he was with young girls. Well, folks, allegedly, nah. Look at the case. He got a RICO charge. Boy, oh boy. They can do anything they want. They have these makeup laws to take down our people. But I digress. 703 area code. Did I tell you?
Elder Bacard.
He should have.
Brothers.
Yes, sir. He should have had the right people around him. He trusted those people around him. It's important that you have people that you can trust around you. I tell you that. 703 area code. How you doing, Steve? The floor is yours.
Salawam, brother, Elder Bacard, and this is Brother Stevie Diamond. I really love this.
Stevie
lesson.
Diamond. How you doing,
Elder, brother? I am blessed by this lesson. Blessed by the best. As well, as you know, as in spirit, this was a timely lesson. I greatly appreciate this. I remember years ago coming into the truth, the transition. I called you. You were in the UK, and you were in a basement. You played some keys, and I was looking for a place to study, to get into to fellowship, and I was coming out of that whole scenario myself. They asked me to sacrifice my ex-girlfriend during that time, and it was
Hold up. What you mean they asked you to sacrifice your ex-girlfriend?
I was in the middle of an independent deal with a subsidiary label, And I couldn't avoid going independent. I started doing shows independently. I was singing in Walmarts and doing stuff, and I was getting shows independently, paid shows, and getting a local buzz. I was leveraging that buzz, and then all of a sudden, you know, an independent label. So, quote-unquote, and this is how they disguise things. They call them independent labels, but they have major backings. So they'll give you this illusion of being independent, but the money trail goes right back to the same people. I ended up...
I understand.
Listen,
I understand how they use these independents, but really they're subsidiaries of the big companies, Sony and others. Universal supposed to have been an independent label, but everyone knew that Universal was only a subsidiary of the big wigs. But again, what do you mean they ask you to sacrifice your girl?
So I'm in a meeting with I really don't want to say their names out of respect, because I
don't say their names.
I'm just going to say this much: a well-known manager of a singer from the area, a well-known professional singer from Virginia. Was taking interest in me. They were having a birthday party at a hotel. They asked me to come out. We had a mutual friend. It was about five of us at a hotel out there in the National Harbor. They started saying personal things to me that I never exposed to them. And I was trying to figure out how did they get this information. They were saying, you know, your girlfriend would be, you know, okay without you, and you know, and started alluding to things, saying that, you know, pretty much you got it in order. They were like, sing happy birthday. So I sung happy birthday for the young lady that we were celebrating. And they started saying, well, you want to get into business, right? I said, yeah. They said, well, you know what you got to do. So I'm thinking she's going to give me pointers on like vocally or business tips or whatever. She says, well, you got to sell your soul. So my man, Yahawa, who was my manager during that point in time, a guy named Yahawa, coincidentally, one of my best friends, he steps in. He said, Diamonds don't do that. He said, he stepped in and was highly upset that there was even a conversation. I said, no, I want to hear what she got to say. She says, well, okay, it's two ways. I said, well, you know, she said it's two ways to do it. It's what she called a financial sacrifice or a blood sacrifice. I said, well, what's the financial sacrifice? She says, well, this is where you make an agreement with them, but you know exactly what you're getting into. You know that you're selling your soul to Satan. You know, and she's a well-known manager.
Okay, you know. Hold on, let's walk this back. Okay, now when you say well-known manager, you're not talking in the lines of Sylvia Rome, no?
No, not quite that big.
Because she's executive.
Yeah.
She's executive. Yeah. Let me ask you this question. Without names, let me go back real quick. When they say make a financial sacrifice, what does that entail?
That means you're gonna take a major loss eventually. They can come and take everything from you. You're gonna make an agreement that you know that at some point somehow they can frame you and attach you to a scenario that you know that you know that is bogus.
Diamond. I'm going to play a song in a minute, but the reason why I wanted to step in, because I wanted to help brothers and sisters, since we're talking about Lucifer's musical gate to hell, right? How they make us believe that it's the artist independently operating and doing things, or even the moguls who are front men, and women. But at the end of the day, with your financial sacrifice, everything is actually given back to the rightful owners who have given you the position as an idol over the world. The example, you notice how when Motown got big to a certain degree, Barry Gordy out of nowhere had to sell it back. We thought it was all about him. But what was the agreement in the beginning? Again, one more. Fenty.
Wow.
With Rihanna. All of a sudden, she's turning it over to some white woman to run Fenty, when really she was the face during her prime that made that a multi-billion dollar product. or name. But we don't know that, obviously, to some degree, allegedly, it's being handed over based on that initial agreement. On and on and on, they use us to progress their systems, Pied Piper, and at the end of the day, it goes back to who? The people who we made an agreement with. Maybe that's on one level of that financial sacrifice you're talking about.
Con, it's definitely a big layer, yeah. Of it, a huge layer of it, because they were definitely and they know before they come for you, they've already sized you up. They know personal things about you. It felt like, you know, one of the girls was from Disturbing the Peace. I'll say that much. She was in the room, which was Ludacris's label, and she was celebrating with us, and she started to kind of coerce me, trying to groom me in, trying to say, hey, things like, hey, you know, started saying other celebrities that had did it already, you know, and she said, you know, I got my dentistry, you know, I got my money from it. So they get things for practical reasons as well. It's not just for music industry. So they might go get a doctor's practice or whatever of their own. So it leads, they try to give you the illusion like you can get out of it. But once you're in there, it's very costly, and I yield.
You know what? Hey, before you yield, Diamond, I got a new studio that I'm doing all my productions and stuff from, and we're gonna have a news thing set up. It's gonna be totally professional. With the help of my brothers and sisters, I was able to step this up to the next level, and I would love to invite you into the studio so you can do some things, if you don't mind. I'm asking you right now. I love what you do. If you can do that, that would be a blessing with me, brother.
All right. All praises. That would be an honor.
All right.
All praises.
All right. That's number one. Number two, I tell people all the time, Diamond, 18 years, no, I was 17 years of age when my family signed a deal with, it was an offshoot of, I was 17 or 16, probably younger than that. It was called the Diamond Five, right? We was with an executive
wow.
by the name of Diamond Five was the name of our group. We was with a guy named Steve Bernstein who discovered us through Starburst Entertainment when we were doing shows and opening up for acts here in Philadelphia. Listen, they found out because this, I guess that's why my name became the Spirit of Songs, Rikashiar. They found out that I was the one writing all the songs at such a young age, right? I was writing all the songs for the group, even though I was writing them for my little brother. Check
wow.
this out, Diamond. They take me to this party, this famous, so-called, quote-unquote, famous comedian, right? That's all I can say. We go into Jersey, not too far from where Whitney Houston lives, right? But that's before she became all big and all that. Listen, they take me into this house, and there's this big party going on, this music party. And one guy who was representing me, a lawyer at this time, saying, yeah, this is how we do it, da-da-da-da. They go up to the next floor, and there's drugs and everything there. And he says, listen, stay from off of that floor. So in my mind, you have to realize how innocent I'm thinking, coming from the Christian church, being introduced to this. At the same time, on Diamond Street, I'm seeing all of our people getting drugged away, going to jail and all this for selling drugs. And I'm like, isn't this illegal? And the guy started laughing at me. I'm like, I'm a kid. I'm like, isn't this illegal? Come on, man. They says, listen. He says, listen, what's illegal out there is different in here. Stay from off that floor. Right? don't go up there. So what I'm saying is there's always some people that will protect others from crossing over or going over into there. There is some people in the business, not all, that won't allow certain things when it comes to if they think that you're one of those people, you know, who's untouchable as far as that's concerned, who'll be better off not dealing in the dark side, right? But he said, do not go on that floor. You hear me, young man? Do not go there. So I did, it's through the Most High, I had someone around me who had my best interest at that time. It could have been easy. Someone said, come on upstairs. Do whatever you want to do. But I'm just saying, there's two separate worlds. Everything is legal. Where they are, everything is, there's nothing illegal. Until you begin to do what? Step on toes. It was deep. It was an experience for me. But a lot of these things we have to talk in private so we can talk about the music and, you know, the role the music led us on. And Brother Diamond, the same way the music eventually led you to the truth to where me and you are speaking right now, the music led me here too. If it wasn't for the music, I wouldn't have found out who I was.
Mm.
Check this out.
Woo.
There were brothers, Barakiah and all that, the brother named Maurice Wilcher. You can look him up. If you look up Maurice Wilcher, you'll see his first video. There's Dr. Dre right there in the video. Look up Maurice Wilcher on YouTube, and you'll see that's one of Dr. Dre's first artists. Friends.
Will do.
Let me tell you. Listen, they were in New York, and they seen brothers on the street teaching. They were at the Hit Factory recording and came back and said, Rich, there's something I think you need to know. And I'm like, what you talking about, brother? I'm trying to get, we got to make this money. Let's get the unit together. And let's make this music together. I don't want to hear what you got to say unless we talk about going to the studio. And then a brother looked me right in the eye and say, Rich, listen to me. We are the children of Israel. And I'm like, what? The children of what? He says, listen, this music stuff and all that is one thing. But I'm telling you right now, we're the chosen people of God. I've seen it in New York. There's something you need to hear. And if it wasn't for the music business, I would have never heard that. That was the calling that day. Me as a young man seeking the music business. And this is how I found the truth, brother. So when I get this studio together, I'm bringing you in. I'm going to talk to you, all right? I'm going to write your number down right now. Hold on. We have a lot to talk about, young man.
Wow, all praises. Yeah, it's a lot of alignment there because literally I saw some of your videos. And I told the young lady, I said, do you know where the children of Israel? I said, do you know who you are? The young lady from Disturbing the Peace, after she tries to coerce me and groom me, it gave me, that truth gave me another ounce of foundation to stand on in the face of that. And she started crying. She said, she literally ran out of the room and said, you sound like my brother. And went into the other room. What was going on in the room in that space? Because I'm sitting in the living room area of the hotel room, and we all supposed to have been partying, and that changed the whole dynamic of that night. And when I brought that out, and I was sitting in the room by myself at that point, and I said, you know what, I can't be here, and I had to make a decision.
Diamond, I'm gonna tell you, man. But when they said it, it was like I was hit by a ton of bricks. I knew what they were saying was true. I couldn't confirm it. I didn't know it. But at the end of it, when I went into the book, it all made sense. I'm like, now I can understand. I thought I was being treated this way because I'm black.
Wow.
You're right? I'm like, I thought it was a black or white thing. This thing is way deeper than black and white. This is spiritual. And when I read Deuteronomy 28 and slave ships and what they would do to our people, I'm like, hey, it's right here. When Martin Luther King says, I've been to the mountaintop, and I may not get there with you, brother, the mountaintop is where Moses received the law that would one day free us. And I'm like, this is what makes sense. Our talent. It was just in our current time, Diamond, that we started going to school and all these things. A lot of this natural talent that we have came naturally gifted from God. We didn't go to universities for our artistry and our know-how. The majority of the gifts the world have used from us, through us like batteries, was God-given. They made universities for themselves to try to mimic artificially what the Most High gave us spiritually. I'm going to tell you, brother, without school, we were the first university. That's who Solomon was. Brother, we're going to talk. We're going to have the music here. We're going
to
sit down and talk. The first university was Solomon. What Esau and others did when they went to Solomon, they started writing stuff down so that they can make their own universities. But it was what the Most High gave Solomon spiritually, naturally, that they needed to write down to teach their children. So, I mean, look at Mike, who do all my music. Mike can't read one note of music. One note of music can he read. Naturally, he's spiritually gifted to move with that music. But brother, we're going to have, we need just to sit down. So don't worry about it. We're going to talk.
Please, I'm looking forward to it, Elder. I'm looking forward to it. Yes, please lock in my number. I definitely will keep y'all be on standby.
My brother, my brother. Bless you.
Yeah. Rock and
my
top.
Brother.
Bless you.
That's right. Diamond, I'm gonna end it tonight a little later with this song, but yeah, music is so important, folks. And it's important that we, as spiritual beings, as spiritual creatures from spiritual beings from on high, we need to filter or understand what goes into our mind when it comes to music. It has such a profound and influential powers. So it's important that we make sure our children aren't listening to Ice Spice and all these others. I'm going to tell you, Steve Diamond, ain't that something? I'm going to call you up, my brother. Shashwahana has a comment.
Shalom, Elder. How you doing?
I'm blessed by the best. How are you? Enjoying the discussion this evening?
Oh, yes, Elder. All is well. It was a pleasure seeing you and Elder Loria at the Dinner and a Warning here in the Carolinas a few months ago. I really enjoyed myself, and so did my husband.
Praise the Most High. Nice to meet you.
Yes. All praises. Nice to meet you, too, Elder. I did have two quick comments. So the first one is kind of a story. So my husband, before we got into truth, very talented, gifted man. You know, when you think of music, you think of like being witty with words and stuff like that. That's one of his specialties when it comes to like rapping. And when he was a young man, he shared with me that he had the opportunity to sign a deal with this record label. And the guy that he was going to sign with said to him, "I tasted the fruit." He said, "I know what this is. I tasted the fruit." When he questioned the guy basically, you know, offering him like all these material things. And then when he questioned the guy, he just got real dark and said that. So that was kind of scary to hear how you just switch from enticing someone with all these things, you know, riches, I guess you would say, or material possessions, and then just switch to saying you tasted the fruit and you know what this is. Another story, another young man that I knew when I was in college, he was very, very talented as well. Like, he was a music producer. He actually did a song with Ra Digger. You remember her from back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Ra Digger was... She was tough.
He did a song with her, and she had set up like a meeting for him to go meet up with Neo, Elder. And I don't want to bear false witness, but this is what I was told. This young man said that Neo said for him to like do any type of music relations, I'm going to just put it like this. There was some type of sodomy that had to take place in order for that to go down.
Lord. Exactly. I had to talk to you over that one. We're not going to bring any Fleece Johnson type of connotation into this discussion today,
right.
You know, you're saying that there's a fleece agreement. But we'll leave that there. We'll leave that there. We'll call it a fleece agreement. But I heard about that too. But I think the Most High that those propositions that didn't come. Maybe the Most High delivered me early with the truth of being Israel. But I heard there's many men getting fleeced.
He said he got up out of there, Elder. He said there was no way. He said I got up out of there. But and then the last thing I want to leave you with is so as a young woman growing up, my mom, like all the music you was talking about earlier, you know, like a family staying together and all that stuff. My mom, she was a 70s baby. So, like, I grew up, like, listening to all that kind of music. But being in the age group, so I'm 32. So being in the age group that I'm in right now, I witnessed the decline firsthand, you know. So you see, like, well, you hear all that beautiful music. You know, of course, my grandmother, too. She's in the music industry. But like on her own, she has her own stuff. But basically, like, I've witnessed all the great music that talked about keeping families together. And then when you talk about the 90s music, that right there is when it like really went down south, and then it just kept declining from there. So like, and then you think about Toni Braxton, she has such an amazing voice, right? But I was watching an interview where she came out and said, this lady was like, man, I just love all your songs about love. Toni Braxton said, I don't have any music, no love songs. How could you say that? She was like, I don't have any love songs. And I was like, wow. So I sat there and I went back, and I know all the songs. But you know, you just listen to the music. You don't think about the words that they're saying. And it's so true. She really didn't have many songs that talk about love and keeping families together, but she has such a beautiful voice, you know. And where you fast forward to now, and I'm just using her as a small example, but when you think about the people that when I was in college, you know, all the rap, like the Lil Wayne and Nicki Minaj, like you said, and how she's still like having an influence, trying to come up out of that, I can tell you that it was one of the struggles for me as a young lady, because, you know, that's all the music you're really exposed to. Whereas, like, now we have people in the body, and I'm from the South Carolina body, just so you know. But we have people like Shaddai Yawar, King Chazwar, Yasharala Twins, you, of course, like everybody. But those guys that have, like, the catchy beats, I think it's the beats behind the music is what catches these young folks, and that's what they're wrapped up in, you know. And people like me, I could decipher from what these people are saying and not apply it to my life, but these young kids are really taking it, and they're like, I'm going to do this because this person said this, you know. Where Future, what, the rapper, came out and said he doesn't even do
Well, sister, I do got a segue, but I'm with you, sister. Bless you. And I'm going to see you next time I come to the Carolinas. Bless you. Great point.
Shalom.
Like I told him, boy, hey, I heard, hey, sometimes they got that fleece agreement. You got to watch out for that in a business. You got to watch out for the agreements, right? I heard he's back. And I don't think I want to hear, the information, the philosophy he may divulge, you know, on society, being loose now. Don Ye has a comment.
Shalom.
Shalom, Don Ye. Today we're talking about Lucifer's music's gate, The Gate to Hell, how they use the music to slowly destroy the image of the children of Israel here in America as a pretext to do what? To have the other nations on the outside of America view us as less than before destroying us. They use the music to open up a gate to hell and destroy our image. What say you?
Exactly. If you recall when rap had started, It was more upbeat, right? More upbeat.
Yeah.
More actual real instruments. And once they started synthesizing the beat, it started, the bass started going lower, lower, and lower. And I believe it's the 808 is one of the hits, the lowest, one of the lowest bass, and it gives off a vibration. I seen a clip that you can plug in these electrodes to a metal plate and take sand and put it on top of the metal plate and take each vibration, and it will flip to different geometrical shapes, right? It's very interesting to me. I don't really go too deep and stuff like that, but it's very interesting to me that each frequency had a different geometrical shape. And I could just think about how the bass is down to the 808. It brings out a different feeling. You know what I mean? It's almost in every music now. And
I'm gonna tell you when it comes to the original 808 bass tones, I don't know whether or not it can make geometric shapes, but it's some of the, when it comes to dropping the bottom of a real, of a song, as far as, you know, a serious bottom mix, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. I'm talking about that low tone. A bass player cannot duplicate that particular tone. It's deep. But what you're saying is it has some darkness to it, is what you're saying.
Yes. Especially over what they say. You know?
Okay.
And,
well, I don't know. I'm gonna look that up. But go on. What else you have to say there?
Yeah. Also, shout out to my brother and my body, Stevie Diamond. Shalawan to my brother, Shalawan. And
all right, Shalawan.
Also, and I mean, it really, when I was a kid, my mom always told me, hey, don't listen to that news. I was banned from listening to radio. Like, my mom would hear me playing the radio when she come up from work. I'd get on punishment because she knew what was behind it. And, you know, I rebelled.
Good.
And I kept on listening to it. And I seen, you know, how it affected me. It really did. And just listening to it, going to sleep with it in your ear. And it just, it leads people down a path, you know what I mean, that contributes to our demise, you know. And they did it physically with the drugs. They do it mentally, what they put us through. And they had to do it spiritually because music is spiritual. For physical, mental, spiritual, they're trying to hit us all aspects. Yeah. And
one more thing, because I got to go to the next one. So one more.
Okay. I have a brother that's in prison. And I converse with him sometimes. And he wanted to ask that about possibly donations of, you know, books of to the library. They're in
this is what you do. You're in the church there?
Yes, I'm Virginia Body.
Okay, the only thing you have to do is get with the deacon or bishop over the body and give me his name and where to send the book, and I'll send him all the books he needs. I'll give it to him. I have some in my library that's extra, and I'll just order them, and I'll send them all to him, and he can put them in the library if he'd like. From Babylon and Timbuktu, Judea trembleth over Rome, Bible dictionaries, Zondervan Bible dictionaries, all of the Book of Jasher, Book of Enoch, everything I have, I'll make sure you get. All right?
All praises. And it's Deacon Kevin in Virginia Body. He'll be getting in contact with you, and I appreciate that.
Tell him to contact me, and I'll give him a whole list. I don't care how much it costs. Give me his name. I'll send him all the books he needs. All right?
All praises.
Thank you.
And Shalawan to you.
No problem. Thank you, my brother. And the other thing, too, is while I was overseas, I got a phone call from another brother who's in a famous group, and he spoke to me over the old Skype phone that I used to have when Skype was actually Skype. You can hold classes on Skype without it dropping back then. But anyway, the brother called me because the group no longer was touring. They broke up, whatever the case is. I'm going to tell you the group is. And he says, yeah, I know you told me you dealt with music and all that. And I was shocked to be talking to the brother. He says, Elder, I'm going to let you know, There's some evil things going on in the business. You wouldn't believe, man. And I'm like, I would believe it. He said, man, he says, there's this floor, allegedly. He says, Sony and all this, in their music, in their buildings, they have a floor that only a certain, that don't stop regularly unless someone has a key. And he says, one of the greatest producers in the 90s and 2000s, y'all know his name, he says, once they mix a song, they take it to a quote-unquote rabbi, this is what they say. There's a rabbi who comes in the building, goes to this secret floor in the music, in the building, and go into a room with a black door to pray over the masters. Before delivering the masters to the radio stations to play it. And I'm like, what? He says, listen, the producers know about this. He says, it's top magic. This is why they call the finished product masters. He says, because there's a spirit that comes in through, they said rabbis come in, certain high rank rabbis, and pray spirits over the songs, and these usually become the number one songs. And it's controlled through a master. So if it's coming from a master, what are the people who are listening to it? Slaves. You know, the finished product is called a master. I want ownership of my masters. So this brings a whole nother understanding to why artists are looking to get their masters back from the industry, because because there's some spiritual powers or control that comes with you owning what was given over to them. And I said, Lord have mercy, he delivered me with this truth. Because I'm going to tell you why. People know, growing up, the only thing I knew was playing basketball and what? Music. That's all I knew. Outside of going to church, I played basketball and music. That's it. That's what I was known for in North Philadelphia. That's all I've done. And I couldn't see myself making it anywhere in the world without music as the catalyst. So I was going to make it. That was my whole idea. I'm getting my family out of the hood. I'm making it. So there was no other options for me outside of making it in the music business. That's what I thought. So I thank the Most High he intervened. Who knows where we'd be right now, where I would be. So he delivered me. Lukeman has a comment.
Blessings, 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 Elder Rashia, and also Elder Lawyer. I just want to just say real quickly before I get to my point, you brothers have been a blessing to me, man. And I've been trying to get the Dallas body. I'm from the East Coast. I'm from the DMV, the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, Fairfax. But I stay in the Dallas area now. I've been here for quite a while. And I left some information with another brother, a God-fearing man of God, that took this call. So I want to get right to it. You're speaking to an ex-gang member.
Okay.
You know, I'm in the truth now. You know, but
okay.
leaving from the 80s.
Okay. Can you say which gang you were affiliated with, or are you just keeping that?
Absolutely. 107 Hoovers, the Hoover Gangster Crips. Yeah.
Okay.
107
the Crips. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Go on.
So from the East Coast, leaving the East Coast, mom and dad. My dad was a pastor. My twin brother and I, and we relocated to Oklahoma City. I wasn't gang.
Okay.
But this was in the 80s. The 88s, the 89s. But when we speak on music, this is during the time I didn't know anything about the Crips and Bloods, the Red and the Blue, and none of that stuff. You know, we had gangs in the East Coast, but it was about neighborhoods, blocks, and boroughs, and, you know, st- stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember. I remember how gangs were. They were more local.
More local. But when you when you move out Midwest or out West, it was me listening to Diamond and you and Diamond were speaking. Y'all were dropping jewels. Oh my God, I felt every bit of it. But what I realized by watching what I watched today and how both of y'all were dissecting the music industry. Let's talk about it. Ice Cube when he came out with Colors and all the things that were that we of course we can go ahead with NWA and all the things that was pushing this game thing, the game life where now, you know, of course we talked about the drugs, the money, but now pushing this new music that was coming. Now, East Coast, even though the East Coast rap, it was gangster, some of it, but it was different. It was about knuckling up if you had to, or it's about, you know, showing that I stand my ground. It wasn't about me just taking somebody's soul away, you see?
Yeah, but killing them, man. Yeah, they changed that. Let me tell you, brother, I was living in a time where, okay, if you have a disagreement, you go in the schoolyard, everybody come out, we fight it out, and then after the fight is over, it's over, right? If you lose, you lose. You win, you win. And then after that, we playing ball again. Everything is fine. You know, this is something foreign where people have to take out a gun to settle a matter. It used to be, listen, if a cat beat you, that was much respect until you got up enough skills to be able to say, okay, let's do it once more and see where it goes. But at least it stayed with the fist. But now, brother, it's something else. Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah, and you know, during the time, I'm going to skip over a lot of stuff real quick because I know you got a short period of time. But during the time, we couldn't do nothing without putting a certain song on. Let's get ready to ride now. Let's get ready. Let's get ready to go. It was the vibration of the music. It was the beat. I think I heard you say, you know, we want to stay away from the vibration. I don't believe, but it's something that they put, they dialogue, they tap into some type of vibration, and it's an unholy vibration to get your mind ready, get your spirit ready to war up on something. And I noticed, you know, during the time where all of that stuff was kicking off in Oklahoma City, you know, it was bad back in that day in the 90s and late 80s, early 90s. It was bad in that area, I must say. But I realized, you know, in 1995, I hate to say it, but I have to be honest, IUPK, they were deep in Oklahoma City in 1995, 90, 94,
95. Hey, brother, listen. I know they were. I was there. I was in Philly. UPK.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know anything about the truth. And we were on the 23rd. That was the strip, you know, the black side, the east side of Oklahoma City. And I was exposed to the truth when I was gang banged down, and they were passing. They passed. I said, "Listen, man, do you know who you are? You an Israelite." People were laughing. I looked at myself, but I knew that something that they said spoke life into me. If it wasn't for just that moment with them, they opened my eyes to say, "Okay." Now, of course, they're no longer there. IUIC took over that location. Okay, fine.
Okay.
But at the same time, there was a seed that was planted.
A seed planted.
And with that seed, my brother, and I'm gonna let you go. I stepped out. Of course, I went to college, Southern University, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. My brother and I track and field, stuff like this, and I accepted my calling in ministry, regular Christianity. But even in my calling in 2000, I knew who I was because of the seed that was planted. And again, I had to step away. 2013, I said, I'm done. I'm done with regular Christian. I'm done with this, the madness that I see. And I just never looked back after that, you know. And so,
look at that.
Make a long story short, yeah, make a long story short, I said I want to make sure that my wife and I is seated in a place that is comfortable, that is not about race baiting, but it's about the truth. And hey, this is the time now. This is the time. This is the awakening. And you know, I heard you some months back speaking on the Masonic Brotherhood. I was a worshiper master over the Masonic Lodge at one time. So there's a lot that I know that and,
yeah.
And again, you know, the order of Melchizedek, the same thing that Christ, Yeshua HaMashiach, you know, Yahshua went through. You said it. You had people that infiltrated. You sat there and said King Solomon, the study, that was our university, the stuff that was downloaded in us, they had to come and be taught by us. But guess what? We let the wrong ones in. And they took the knowledge. And they knocked someone off. You see? And so the image of what it is no longer the same. Same thing with the rainbow. It's not
the
same.
Brother, listen. I got to go, but we got to sit and talk, brother. We got to sit and talk.
Okay.
There's a lot. Because you're diving into something. I'm going to place you on hold. The brother's diving into something. The brother is diving into something that's true. That when it comes to the proper orders of what you would see the Masonic temples, and we started doing Prince Hall and they would never let us amongst the Scottish and York Rites of Freemasonry, they orchestrated a private society or university that had the knowledge that Solomon had. But folks, we as a nation didn't have to join a secret society or be initiated into the information. We as Israelites have the information as a people. See? And I'm talking about the righteous information, the high levels of knowledge and order when it comes to not just the earthly realm, but how we interact with the spiritual realm. Solomon had all that knowledge. See, but our people go off by, we went into Prince Hall not realizing that the Scottish and York Rites of Freemasonry controls the Prince Hall and Shriners, where they can only operate within our community. But still, a lot of Freemasons who hear what we're teaching understand that, okay, there's a higher knowledge outside of why we joined the Lodge of Brotherhood. Really, they were seeking the truth that the Most High have with us being Israelites when they began to join these societies. But what we're teaching, the true heavenly teachings weren't out there or offered at that time. And a lot of people who are Freemasons, Eastern Stars, they're walking away saying, I can get the knowledge of the Most High without the ritualistic aspect of it. And all that. I can get the truth without joining a brotherhood that's against Christ, that's against God. So I thank the Most High for the truth, because I've had many Freemasons and others come through and say, listen, Book of Jasher and other records, when they go to certain levels of Freemasonry, they were forced, well, they had to understand or read the whole Book of Jasher. And these are all records of Hebrews. So I want to talk to that brother on that level too, because it's all full circle. He went through game, seeing the brothers out there standing in Oklahoma stating that we were Israelites, joined the Christian church, end up joining a lodge for Freemasonry, and out here come around and say, nah, this is where it should be. And now he's a part of the church. Look at that. All praise be to the Almighty. Look at that. Lukeman has, I'm going to pull you in a second. Hold up, I only got a few more. Andre has a comment.
Shalom, brother. How you doing today?
Shalom, Andre. How are you?
I'm doing good. I was watching the video. It's quite ironic how you had Bob Dylan and you mentioned Sam Cooke.
Yeah.
During that time period, Sam Cooke had sang "Blowing in the Wind" by Bob Dylan, and he was saying to himself, he said, "Like, what a white man doing with a song like this? This should be coming from somebody like me." So that's what had inspired him to write Change Is Gonna Come. However, Sam Cooke said that was the hardest song that he ever had to write, because during that time period, he was Sam Cooke was having meetings with Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali, and everything like that. And the powers that be saw that as a threat, because, you know, banding all folks together was a threat to their agenda and everything like that. But also what I like about Sam Cooke, when I was back home in Pittsburgh, I sang in a couple of gospel groups, and we would like to sing all the Sam Cooke and the Solstice songs. I sang with one group called the Gospel Quintones, and I sang with another group called the Trouble Tones, who used to open up for the Solstice.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something.
another thing about Sam Cooke, he was the first black artist who owned all his publishings. And he was trying to get other artists involved in owning their own music and everything like that. And see, what the industry does, they hold their publishings and everything for 30 years. After 30 years, they give it back to the artist. Oh, here you go. After they done made a living off the artist's work. That's one of the things I didn't like about it.
Sometimes. Sometimes. Yeah. I was overseas, and when I was overseas, I was working. I was doing some music on the days that, you know, I didn't have to teach and all that. I would two days out of the week, I would do singing and things of that nature or studio work. And one day, a guy invited me and my son and others to come over and do, you know, an elegant type of, you know, house show for their family. I'm like, well, I can do that real quick, only an hour and 15 minutes, right? He would pay us to do that. Then the guy takes me into a room, my brother, and say, look at that over there. Now, this was a Jewish guy. And what did I see? I see a gold record that says Stand By Me, right? And I'm like, what are you doing with that? I'm overseas. You know, darling, stand by me, that song there. Check this out. Old Jewish guy. We did a nice house little show for him, for his family. And this is how they do it. His whole family's there. He says, yeah, I bought that. I owned that publishing for about 30, 40 years. It's somebody living with his whole family off of that one song right now.
Yes, exactly.
Listen, the guy, I had no idea when I was at the man's house that he owned the song in another country. His family still is living off of that black man's family's legacy in music till this day. And I'm like, this is so, listen. And I'm wondering, how do the Most High have me here full circle on the other side of the world seeing this? Here it is. This guy made one song that was so big. This guy's family is still living off of the royalties of that song, while the man who wrote the song family is suffering in America.
Exactly.
I'm like, our people have to wake up. We have to wake up. But go on.
Just like who was that one guy? He used to tour with Sam Cooke. I can't remember his name. Lonely Teardrops. Well,
his manager, you talking about Jackie Wilson?
Yeah.
Wilson.
Jackie Wilson.
Hold up. Not only Jackie Wilson, Donny Hathaway. His death was mysterious. Jackie Wilson. Guess he used to go to all of Jackie Wilson's shows front row to try to learn his style. Elvis learned all of his moves and all that, where the industry was taking him to Jackie Wilson's shows to see Jackie Wilson, how Jackie Wilson's show was put together. Let me tell you, folks, crazy. It's like, let me tell you, our people in America, we developed something in chattel slavery as a people that no other people in the world experience. And because of our unique experience here in America, that struggle we did here through the music, it had an impact on the whole world. And it's a shame that our people in America don't understand how our image and how valued we are and were through our struggle. If the whole world know who we are and know how we became so talented, but yet none of us in America, our people who have slaved here and struggled here, understand our own value. But being on the outside of it, looking in, brother, it's a deep thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this world has run. I'm talking about its society. It runs off of the spirit of Judah. We developed something here through our slavery that no other culture can quantify or understand. I'm going to tell you. And this is what they are afraid of. Our influence. We had to create a culture in of itself just for the sake of self-preservation from one generation to the next. Ever since we were taken from the shores of Africa, we had to develop something. But even Africans never developed, not going through what we went through. And that struggle in of itself has changed the world. Hence the reason, brother, they had to taint our image.
Yes.
They had to change the image of this clean-cut, strong-spirited black man and black woman. And only if we can get that back, if only we can understand the value of that, it made the whole world rich. But go on.
Yes, just like they demonized the death of Sam Cooke. They said he got shot in a hotel
There was an Asian woman involved, and also there was a madam involved, a sister that was involved. That was very mysterious death Sam Cooke was. But brother, I got to get to the next call. I'm gonna give you the last word.
Okay, but Etta James went to Sam Cooke's funeral, and she was looking at his body, and what he looked like and what they had on the autopsy report was completely different. His nose
looked
broke.
Like he was beat. Yep.
His head was decapitated, so the vertebrae in his neck was detached, and his hands was beat up. I say, ain't no woman beat no man like that. Not Sam. Sam Cooke could fight. He was from, you know. Even though he was from Mississippi, but he was hanging out in Chicago.
Every one of our top talents, brother, who make it to a degree and understand what the business is all about, usually die of some mysterious death that no one can explain. And it's time for our people to wake up. And this is why I'm fighting tooth and nail for our brothers and sisters not to buy the narrative that they're putting out on our brothers and sisters with talent who are still living. I don't excuse I don't excuse what R. Kelly did or what they claim he's doing. But what I'm saying is they understand. Let me tell you, it's a shame that if our people get behind what they're doing to R. Kelly, that R. Kelly's children isn't going to benefit from all the work their father put in. And they don't deserve other people who don't look like him to take the money and the legacy that their father made to them. Their children, just because R. Kelly did something, doesn't mean the royalty money and all that belonged to R. Kelly should now go to some other people now. And that's what brothers and sisters need to get behind. They need to get behind, okay, do what you want to do to R. Kelly since y'all claiming that. But what's up with R. Kelly royalties, and will his family see the billions of dollars that their father made? See, when you start following the dollars, they want to talk about sex and all that. But you think they care about somebody dealing with little girls and all that, when it's all types of stories of what the industry does behind closed doors. So it's not like they have a moral high ground to claim that somebody did something sexually wrong within Hollywood or the music business. So what's really going on here? So be careful, brothers and sisters, to not stand on or stomp on brothers and sisters that they are putting out in the media in a negative light. Be careful not to do so, because they need you to to discard your own brother so that they can take his money and the money of R. Kelly's children, the money that belongs to his children. That's what you always need to look at. It's about the money more so than anything else, I believe. Brother, I got to go to the next call, but give me – you got the last word.
You know, even though they try to demonize us in every way they can, just so they have a right to take what we have. You know, they squeeze us like grapes. We got the wine. And through, and just leave us to husk.
Hey, brother, I need you to think about it. You got one person who did all this stuff, right, throughout his whole life. Just like any other – every top pop artist has an entourage or a team to protect them. So this man did all this dirt throughout his whole career, and he go down on a RICO charge where only there's a one-man RICO. That the only person get arrested is him. So the one who books the plane, bodyguards, choreographers, dancers, and then you have those who own the venues, those who actually, the fan clubs, all of these people are operating and making money off of this one man who's seen all this stuff go down. And only one man goes down on a RICO. Man, y'all better wake
up. And also the parents. The parents that was feeding him. Because, you know, feeding his luck.
Oh, yeah.
Put it like that.
Yeah. Put it
hoping
this way.
To get money out of
him. Yeah, we're going to have another conversation on that. But, yeah. So a guy with a reputation like the media is putting out there. But you're going to have parents allegedly bringing their children to get to work with them. So I'm going to leave that there.
Yeah.
All right, bless you.
God bless you. Shalom.
All right. Okay, we have some musicians, artists, everything up here tonight. Hey, this is a good conversation. I'm only going to be on for a little bit, so I can take two more calls, and I'll take the rest of the calls this coming Patreon. Day after tomorrow. Kay has a comment. Come on, Kay.
Shalom, Elder. Shalom, Elder Rakar, and Elder Lawyer.
How are you doing, Kay? I'm blessed by the
I'm
best.
Doing well. I'm
higher.
Blessed by the best.
Lawyer
name
probably
sleeps
right
exactly.
Now. Talk to me.
Yeah.
I'm here. Shalom.
Oh, you ain't dozing off on me?
No, sir.
All right, let's go. All right, talk to me, sister. Come on, Kay.
Right. Do you remember that song, White Lines, from the 80s?
Yeah, White Lines. Matter of fact, we used to dance to that. Breaking dance and all
exactly.
that. Running through
right.
my mind. It was the beat. But what about it?
I was brought up very strictly. And it wasn't until, I think, maybe the early 2000s when I found out what that song was actually about. That's how naive I was.
Hey, that's how naive I was. I was popping and locking off of that. Right?
Yeah, I had no clue. Well,
you know, and then they got these simple songs that came out later. I'm in love with the cocoa. I'm like, this is brain dead music. And then I remember going to the mid 90s, the late 90s, 2000s, where they would put it DMX. Boom, dun-dun-dun, I'm going to make me lose my mind. And then brothers started shooting, and the music comes on, people hitting people with the butt of a gun. I'm like, yo, the music would just have everybody in the club get up and start fighting. I'm like, hey, music has power. But go on, sister.
Yes. I also remember, the music of Al Green. From back in the day, as you were saying. Not only that one, but For the Good Times.
Lay your head on my pillow. Lay your old engine of body close to mine. Oh, Al Green was serious.
Yeah.
I got to hear that tonight. For the Good Times.
That was my mom's favorite. She used to sing that,
yep.
Man, I'm telling you, she used to sing that song, and everybody would have to stop and listen.
Hey,
yeah,
sister,
it was
remember once a year, and the family would put on the OJs, the family reunion?
Yeah.
When that music, it would, the barbecue, was the children playing, and the people jumping rope, and the family reunion comes on. And it just brings us into the reality, the reason that the family has come together. You know what I mean? I remember that. I remember that.
My family is they're very spontaneous. My brothers back in the day, they had what we called a sound system, and we used to play out at parties and nightclubs and pubs and so on. And so it started from home. My mom brought my brother, oldest brother, a stereo system, and we were really, really into music. My oldest brother used to work in a record store. Vinyl back then.
Yeah,
so,
you're giving out your age right now. I'll tell you that.
I don't care.
Yeah,
I'm about your age, maybe a little. Yeah, so my mom said that the reason why she bought the stereo system is because she wanted to keep her sons out of trouble, because the next door neighbor complained about the noise. You know how loudly we played it. With all that bass and everything, because my mom used to work shift like 2 to 10 and 10 to 2. So when she was on the 2 to 10 shift, 10 p.m. at night, we'd play music when we came home from school and work, and some of the neighborhood kids would come to our house. We'd close the curtains, play the music, make them some orange squash or orange juice, whatever, and they'd dance to the music.
Look at that.
Look at that. And so when my mom was coming, we'd get everybody out of the house, turn the music off, sit down like, you know, nothing happened. Those days were amazing, man. That was wow.
I remember where, I mean, you put that needle on that vinyl, you can hear that scratch within the songs. That scratch sound, but it was rough.
Yep.
But I'm gonna tell you, I remember my mother and my father putting it on there. We had the kind of the Capone set where you open it up like a big cabinet, and they would open that thing up and blow a vinyl off and put that thing on. And let me tell you, if they put on something, if they just put on a song, if I could write a little love song, I'll write it about you, yeah. That's it. If I only had my way, I forgot. It was called a love song. Man, they would put that thing on. They would put it on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And me, my big brother, and my sister would come downstairs and look, and this is how you know our people had a certain level of class. As they put that thing on downstairs, we come downstairs. My father come down. He grabs my mother's hand. And they would just sit and just dance just right there in the room by themselves. No audience. No, they didn't even know that we were looking. They didn't even know we were looking at them. Right? I mean, check out those profound memories. Really.
Exactly.
Stamped in the mind of their children.
Yeah.
Right? Now, no, we're in North Philadelphia and all that. So sometimes there's arguments, there's fights, all types of stuff happening in the house, right? Where it looks like it's the end of the world, mama and father going against it, going at each other. And then a week or two later, we witness something like that. You're talking about forgiveness. Let's stay together.
Yeah.
We come down the steps and we're looking. They don't even know we're looking. And my father grabs her hand and says, come on, let's dance. And she got a dress on and they just dancing together. And guess what? Not a care in the world. No one's looking. Man, these generations have lost so much not to have witnessed their mother and father in a moment like that. I'm going to tell you.
As I said, my family is very spontaneous. So when we get together, including my niece and nephews, my brother's children, we just slap on some music, start singing and dancing. A lot of us, we've lost our minds. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be any occasion. It's just that's how we are. And anybody that visits, it's the same thing. Our friends, they have to join in too. They're compelled to join in.
This generation, it's a shame. It's a shame what the industry, what we allow the industry to take away.
Yeah.
It's no coincidence that moments like that are seldom, if at all, within today's relationships within society. It's a shame. They slowly but surely took that away. But then, I'm going to tell you, if you go into some of these others' homes and all that in areas outside, that you see these families still have a grand piano in their homes. They still have some art or culture. They're cultured to a degree not to forget the family's memories and traditions that kept them together, even music. Like I told you, since I go overseas and a guy pulls out he pulled out all the music he purchased, and he still has the albums there. And guess what? Right now, we as a people, everything that we once owned with music is in gigabyte land. It's on some type of USB or it's on our computers. We don't have evidence that any of this has ever happened when it came to music. All of our records they own, they still have them. China brought up all of our albums and all of our 33s and all of. And now we think we still have music, but once these computers gone, there'll be no evidence that we actually had anything in memory of the music that brought us together. That's deep in of itself.
Yes.
Thank you, sister.
I just want to make other statement.
Okay, go on.
I'm not in the 50s, but I don't know if you know, but during that time, they'd have black artists, which would be singing, and they'd be behind the screen. And in front of them, you'd have like the white artists just lip syncing because, you know, they cannot sing. They could not rather sing like us at that time. And believe it or not, they're singing now, though.
I'll tell you that.
Right. Yeah. And it's now. Yeah. I don't know how, but yeah. Yeah, so the black artists were not paid for any of their work at that time. They were stolen. All that was stolen from them. All their hard work, as you said, all that music, no royalties or anything. It's just terrible.
True.
When you think about that.
But
I remember that.
But I'll tell you this, though, sister. Hey, even though they've taken all of the royalties and the money away, what they can't take away is the gift that the Most High bestowed upon us for nothing at all. Let me tell you, the natural gift of music the Most High blessed us with, you cannot put a price on that. So they've used us as slaves and have squeezed every ounce of talent out of us for their own financial gain. But guess what they can't take? They can't take the spirit that delivered the music. And you know what? That spirit still remains. That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you, sister. That spirit still remains.
Shalom.
Bless you, sister. Shalom. All the way over the UK. Ain't that something? All the way over from the UK. All right, now we have one more. Okay, and then Sunshine. 919, I'll give you 2 minutes, 919, and then we'll pick up the calls this coming Sunday. I mean, Friday, I'm sorry, 919. Okay, no one's there. We're going to end it with Sunshine. Sunshine, jump right into it. We're going to give you 2 minutes. Let's go.
Ah, Hi, Shalom. Hi, Elders. Hi, hi, hi. Hi. Hello? 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 Hello?
Come on now.
Hello?
Come on now.
Okay.
You got me Birdmaning over here.
Okay, okay.
Let's talk.
Okay. Okay, Elder.
Oh, my God.
Elder, this topic, it resonates in my spirit down to the marrow core because music is so so important to me. It's so much to me from one breath to another.
Finish
I live
it,
in
I'm
the
done.
Music.
Let's do it. Come
and
on.
And Dan, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Albert, can you hear me?
Talk to me. Come on. Talk. Come
okay,
on.
Okay. 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 Well, I was just saying that this topic resonates in my spirit so much, and because I live in the music day in and day out, all by the grace of the Most High, and the songs, they come nonstop. And it's, you know, sometimes within moments, in the same moment or in a day, and especially on the Sabbath day. And so I continue to learn from the core of what music means to me and how much influence these sounds of the air and waves have on us and how far-reaching that into our lives and our hearts this beautiful music can go. But if in the wrong hands, towards evil, that influence can manifest in mind control towards destruction of the masses from, you know, the mass of one-third angels that Lucifer's tail drew with him. Even those angels, they couldn't withstand the deceiver's beauty and influence in the time of the rebellion in the heavens from the beginning. And now the influence is upon the earth where many, like those first one-third fallen, are tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. And now wide is the road that leadeth to destruction, for the thought that enters the mind of most men comes from what is prepared not for those who are righteous saints of the Most High, but instead it's delusion, and the thoughts that enter those that are seduced by Satan and his failing fantasies is that the music and the words that reverberate from the music from all the media and devices to those seduced can move or shake or change whatever they desire it to change because they feel the music seems so beautiful, so inspired, but the question is from who and from what. And the inspiration does exist indeed because the tree of good and evil and all did exist, but not every inspiration then is towards the good. And I sit in a personal space of wonderment, and just as our King David was inspired by the Most High in unity and strength to take down kingdoms and unite us under one so that Israel would stand and remain if righteousness right. prevailed, and at the end, obedience unto Christ showing us as he's the way, truth, and life, that we too can knock the bottom out of the Babylon cesspool with our beautiful songs inspired by Christ and the Most High and perfect praises to Ahiah. And by grace, our time has come, and Egypt can't stop us from praising our power, Ahiah, now and onto the wilderness till thy kingdom come. All praise be to the Most High.
All praise
That's
bless
all
you,
I
bless
wanted
you.
To say, Elder.
There it is.
Praise the Most High. Good Ahiah. Good Ahiah.
I'll tell you what, that in